Welcome to Sustain Now podcast. In this podcast, we are discussing the challenges and solutions to address the climate crisis by rethinking the value chain from designing, producing, and distributing goods to reach the ultimate goal, zero emissions. I'm your host, Friederike. I'm co-founder of an e-commerce platform, active in different boards, and a tech lover. In this episode, I'm talking with Gavin George, the co-founder of Purgene, a tech cannabis breeding company with the aim to develop different cannabis plants as a new source for plant-based proteins, fibers, oils, CO2 storage, but also for recreational usage. We will talk about the different usages of the cannabis plants, why cannabis could feed the world, the difference to soy, and how sustainable cannabis really is. We will also talk about why the Jurassic Park book and movie inspired him to explore genome editing, but also thinking about security at the same time. Hello, Gavin. I'm really excited to have you on my podcast Sustain Now.
Great. I'm so happy to be here. I know we've been trying to get together for a while now, and it's great to finally get the opportunity.
Exactly. It was a little bit back and forth. Maybe the listeners hear that as well. I'm still having a little bit of a rough voice, you know, a little bit more deeper than usual, because I was also sick. So I'm very excited to talk now about a topic I always wanted to know more about. But I realized when I digged all into the research things you sent to me that I really have not much clue about that topic. So I'm gonna use you to extend my knowledge about cannabis. So before we start into what you're doing and what is your company doing, so it's spelled Purgene or Purgene? How do you pronounce your company correctly?
We call it Purgene.
Purgene, okay.
Purgene, that's right, yeah.
Very good. Okay, Purgene, nice. So before we start digging deeper into that, what you're doing and what is your company doing, it would be great if you can make a short introduction about yourself and why did you start that company?
Gladly. As you might be able to hear, I'm a South African originally, and I started my life really just so interested in how biology could change the world, and this came through really in everything that I did in school and then leading to university at Stellenbosch University, where I studied biotechnology. And from that point, I was attracted over to Switzerland and to join the ETH in Zurich. And from there, I met the co-founder of our company, Michael Ruckel, one of my very best friends and also colleagues in this endeavor that we're going into. And we wanted to develop agricultural technologies that really took research in the lab to the field. And we saw that there was so little communication between those two areas that was really effective. So we thought we had a good idea on how to do it. And then we met Stephen Sen, who had already started the Pure Group. And we decided, let's not make two companies. Let's roll this into one cannabis-focused breeding company that really uses the most modern breeding technologies that are available to us.
And what has been striking you so much that you used cannabis as a plant to research on and to put the focus on?
Cannabis is the most fascinating and enormously powerful plant that we have available to us. We started because we really saw the potential to revolutionize how people can treat themselves in the medicinal world. There's enormous potential there. But when we started to scratch the surface and dig into it, much as I'm sure you have now, we found that there was just so much more there. And now our company has really expanded beyond just medical and recreational, but into the full spectrum of cannabis and hemp. And we think that there's enormous potential to change agriculture as a whole with this plant.
I know I heard a lot of different definitions and words in that around. So it's cannabis, it's hemp, it's THC, CBD, marijuana, hashish. So can you explain a little bit all these differences between these names and definitions, just to get to what we're talking about and how does it all relate to each other?
Right. I mean, that's such a great question to ask, because you're not the only one who's confused. It seems like the whole world seems to use these names interchangeably. And I'll tell you how we see it, right? So there's cannabis, which is the species under which you find all of the various types of cannabis and hemp. In the States, they'll talk about hemp as being a CBD-producing plant, so a low THC plant broadly. And this is to fit with the Farm Bill regulations that they can produce flower-type CBD. Now, CBD is just one of 104 cannabinoids that this plant produces, but THC is the other one. And THC is psychoactive, but CBD is more relaxing, and so much less controversial than THC is. But then when we talk about hemp, we talk about fiber and seed types. And these are types that can be grown to produce alternatives to cotton, alternative proteins that can come into the food system, animal feeds, oils, and so much more.
That's exactly, I think, in the last conversation, what really struck me was the one sentence you said. You said that probably cannabis can in future feed the world. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Are we going to be all
flying high, eating, feeling all very happy and relaxed and while eating a new protein cake?
I mean, this is really my passion when it comes to cannabis as a species. So as I mentioned, you have the compound THC. So that's the compound that's predominantly associated with getting people high, although it has really phenomenal medicinal applications, which we could dig into. But when I'm talking about feeding the world, I'm really talking about the hemp varieties. So you may drive down the street and see them on the side of the road in farms all over, and more these days. And they're generally upright varieties, generally relatively tall by comparison to their fiber types, by comparison to flower types, rather. They often produce flowers, but not at the same density as the flower types. And what's really magic about them is that they grow really, really fast. And they also can produce a lot of seeds and a lot of plant-based fibers. So on the food side, when you're looking at the seeds, they have really high quality protein and they produce a lot of it per acre. And they produce high quality oils. And both of these can be integrated into nutritional supplementation for humans and for animals, but really at a very productive rate.
If you would compare that to other plant-based proteins, like say soya, beans, or there's so many quinoa and so on, how does it rate per gram, or is there anything to compare it with? Like how much protein is in 1 gram or et cetera?
Great question. So I like to talk about soy because this is one of those plant-based proteins that we have a lot of in the food system. And I really should preface this by saying that that I have no grudge against soy. I just like to compare it directly against the potential of cannabis. And the thing with soy is that it's become enormously productive through modern breeding. So it's 250 or 350% more productive now than it was even 60 years ago. So for that reason, it's become very economical to produce, but it has challenges. It grows very well in tropical environments like Brazil, where because it's tropical and humid, it has to be sprayed frequently with fungicides. It also produces estrogenic compounds, which are not very desirable in the food system. And to get up to that productivity level, a lot of the soy that we consume is genetically modified. Cannabis, by contrast, you can grow anywhere. And can be bred even more to get into new production environments. And right now, today, it produces about 60% the amount of protein per acre as soy does. But what you have to realize is that that headroom, the genetic headroom that we can breed into, the improvement that we can put into this plant without genetically modifying it is enormous. We think in the next few years we'll get 100 and maybe even 300% more productivity with the right breeding over the right time scales.
Okay, interesting. So because I totally agree with the soy, you know, it's you need a certain environment to actually grow it. Is not cannabis, at least what I was reading about, that it needs a lot of water as well, it needs heat, and is it really, can you grow it everywhere? How sustainable can you grow cannabis compared to soya or to beans? Or is it, I was reading about that you need a lot of water, heat for growing it. Can you really grow it even in Scandinavia?
So this is the beauty of cannabis. When you're talking about the requirements to grow the plant right now, that's one thing. This is basically based on varieties that we've had for decades and haven't been sufficiently improved in during that time. A lot of this lack of improvement is because of prohibition that we've seen in the hemp and cannabis space in many parts of the world. The breeding programs have advanced the breeding of it to some extent. But now, that's the one set piece. Now, the other set piece is that cannabis has been with humans for 10,000 years. It started in Central Asia and it moved with humans all around the globe. And during that time, it's become, it's picked up adaptations to those various environments that we can now leverage. So a program like ours can take all of those traits that are already existing in hemp and cannabis as a whole, and bring them together to create the right varieties which are productive and environmentally friendly for the environments that they will be produced in. And that's the task ahead of us.
Okay, so it's like right now it's maybe not more sustainable, but you see the path to get quite quickly to be one of the most sustainable protein-based plants. Is that what I understood correctly?
I believe that right now it's even got significant advantages over incumbent crops in terms of sustainability. It does require a bit of quite a lot of nitrogen, but this is something that we'll be working on. In terms of water use, this is very addressable within this species. And for all of the other requirements, heat, as you mentioned, we can leverage geographic locations. However, that's definitely not a strict requirement for productivity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you could actually plant it in Scandinavia on a field and it would grow?
The Scandinavian summer. if we're going towards the shoulder seasons, we might need a little bit more breeding.
Okay, got it. So you talked about the breeding. I think you call it breeding 3.0 or something like that. So right. How to develop the plant. I think you also, I've seen that you created already 40,000 different plants. Can you explain a little bit more what you mean with this breeding development? You know, there's also this term CRISPR you hear everywhere in the market. Can you give a little bit context about what is 3.0 breeding? What is CRISPR? And what these 40,000 plants, different plants, what does it mean? And where you're standing in the development and where you want to go and why you're doing that?
Absolutely. And the breeding 3.0 is a bit of a contentious issue in our company that you've touched on. If you talk to my chief scientific officer, he'll say we're very clearly on breeding 4.0. But what it is it's we're really taking a totally different approach to the rest of the cannabis industry. And we're also taking enormous learnings from the broader agricultural breeding sectors. So what we had to do is we had to throw out the rule book and basically all of the information that existed about cannabis when we started the company. We created really exquisite, fully assembled genomes in a pan genome, which is a collection of genomes that encompasses all of the diversity of the species. Then built on that, we could develop technologies to be able to look at genomes, the entire genome of every plant that comes through our system. And we get a very good idea of what is contained within those genomes at a very high resolution. Then we compare that with this enormous phenotyping database that we created by actually measuring all of the physical characteristics of the plant through digital photography and then machine learning and extracting traits, and also through dozens of students clicking through thousands of photos, which we're very grateful for. But ultimately, what this gives us is these incredible data sets. We've got 2 million data points that we physically measured. We have 50 million genomic polymorphisms, differences in the genomes, that all have the potential, if not the likelihood, to change the ultimate characteristics of the plant. So altogether, this allows us to map traits to the genome, and then we have Lego blocks that we can build new varieties out of. But that building process is where the 4.0 comes in. So here we're working with top academics around the world, including Professor Bruno Studer of the ETH and several others. And we are developing algorithms that allow us to predict how a plant will perform up to 3 generations in the future, leveraging our data and all in the computer before we even put a single plant out into the field for the next round of selection. So this is the power of modern computational breeding mixed with these enormous data sets that we've created.
So would you rather say that you're a technology company or a breeding company?
Absolutely, we're a technology company. But don't let my head of breeding hear that I said that.
Okay. So it's rather you focusing on the technology stack to really identify which one of these, the genomes, if you put them differently together, as you said, the Lego, then which one of that will be the most sustainable ones, which can survive in Scandinavia, and which can produce the most seeds, etc.
Absolutely. So I think that's the key point, is that all organisms are just a collection of traits. In humans, it might be eye color, hair color, but in plants, especially in cannabis, we're looking at fiber length, disease resistance, water use efficiency, growth rate. What we do is we collect these traits using classical breeding. So there's no genetic modification in our program. So all of the mixing of genomes happens classically, and there's a technology layer below and above that to identify the traits and also to bring these traits together into high-performance, industrially-ready varieties.
Okay. And how does CRISPR fits into that?
I'm a biologist, and I come from biotechnology, and I certainly don't want to speak badly of CRISPR. I think it has great potential to do good in the world. However, in some crops, you need to use genetic modification technologies like CRISPR to be able to bring out beneficial qualities in those plants. This is generally in well-bred crops where you can't make any change with classic breeding that won't upset everything else in the plant. There it makes sense. In cannabis, it makes no sense to go for genetic modification. It only allows you to go target by target. It takes an incredibly long time to test whether your hypothesis is correct. And even then, you have to go through a whole regulatory process which slows down your time to market. So we've taken an approach that completely avoids any kind of genetic modification, CRISPR, or anything similar.
Okay. So coming back to your Lego example, you have yellow, green, red Lego, and you just, mix them around, and then you have a new plant. And CRISPR, they change the green Lego to a red Lego.
That's a perfect example. I'm gonna use that in the future.
Good. Okay. Good. Just to understand. Super interesting. Coming back to, you said you will develop this technology stack, or you already did, and you want to develop a lot of different plants, which you already are doing. If you think about the use cases for that, so you have one part, as you said, your CBD, you have the medical part, you have the fiber, you have the seed. Is there anything else what you can use it for?
So fiber, seed for feed and extraction of starches, proteins, oils. There's that. There's the carbon capture aspect that I really love. And this leverages the fact that cannabis is just an incredibly fast growing plant. And because of the fact that it is a plant and it grows fast, all of the carbon that moves into the plant is carbon that's coming out of the atmosphere. So what we are very interested in is creating plants which are really designed only for growth. Get as much carbon out of the atmosphere and fix it in that plant as efficiently as you can. And this is one of our major breeding goals, where I think we will have enormous success just looking around at the plants we have growing in the field right now.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So how long does a cannabis plant live?
That's the other great thing. It grows very fast, but it lives for 3 months, maybe four on the outside, if you're growing it in a field until it's ready to harvest. I'm guessing you're leading to what happens to that carbon after it enters into the plant.
And, exactly.
And I think that this is one of the major areas where I am incredibly excited. Again, because there are many ways to permanently remove that carbon from the environment, or at least semi-permanently remove it from the environment. The one way is to create building materials out of it. If you're taking the cellulose from the plant, which are incredibly strong fibers, you're using it to create insulation or integrating it into plastics, which we are doing as one of our projects to decrease the oil content in plastics. You can fix it away effectively forever for hundreds of years. But one of the other interesting avenues to look at is biochar. If you're growing a field of cannabis, you can dry the cannabis, use it to power the biochar plant, and then create charcoal effectively, which is all 100% net fixed carbon from a field of cannabis, and that's stable forever. There are some accessory uses for biochar. Some people suggest it might be good as a fertilizer. I'm not sure yet, but it certainly is fixed from the atmosphere where we want it to be.
Interesting. So if you could compare it to a forest, which usually I think it takes 20 to 30 years till they actually have the full potential of CO2 capture, because it takes quite some time till it grows. Taking a square meter or, I don't know, like 100 square meters. Have you compared that? Like a forest, how long does it take to grow versus like, cannabis growing, and what's the CO2 capturing of the same land use?
We have just run all of these numbers actually for one of the projects that we're starting up. So we're specifically looking at cannabis as an alternative source of cellulose for paper production. So generally in the industry, they rely on eucalyptus trees to be able to produce the cellulose. That's because eucalyptus is already a very rapidly growing tree. And whenever I talk about growth, you can relate it directly to capturing carbon. So it's a very rapidly growing plant. And just based on biomass alone, it looks like the productivity of cannabis, especially in some of the lines that we have as kind of really prototype varieties, our prototypes can capture as much as 10 times more carbon or have 10 times more growth. And this seems to equate to about 3 to 5 times as much productivity as eucalyptus trees for that specific application. It's really off the scale. It's an order of magnitude better at fixing carbon and growing than classic trees.
Interesting. Have you considered the whole life cycle, like from water over to nitrogen, everything what you use? Like, have you considered the whole life cycle when you did that assessment?
Yeah, certainly. So there are many aspects to this. So the one aspect is that we are developing these prototype varieties. So now we have these highly productive varieties, which we can run the numbers on. Now this year, and you have to see this in person when you can, we take these prototype varieties out to the field We do all of the agronomy on them. We see how productive they are when they're planted close together, far apart, with fertilizer, without, more water, less water. And then we can start to gauge exactly what you're talking about, the total input over the life cycle of this plant, but all the way to products. So I want to take these plants now off the field, and I want to create wood pellets for burning in heating systems around Europe, and take it all the way through that process, and then figure out what exactly is the cost with these high-performance hemp varieties. And we'll have data for you on that very shortly. But my gut feeling is that it's going to be significantly more environmentally friendly.
Wow, it's really a wonder plant in a lot of different aspects. Amazing. So how, like 3 months you said, how tall, or is it more important how much the leaves are growing, how wide? Like what means high productivity and quickly growing? Is it 5 meters high, 1 meter, especially wide, just to get a feeling for that?
Right. I mean, this is entirely dependent on what you want to produce. In the next 3 to 5 years, if we have our way, you'd see 5 different cannabis varieties producing 5 different products, and you won't know that they're the same species. You would never be able to tell that they're the same. So if you're looking at flower production for medicinal market, we expect these to be high density, mostly flower, as few leaves as possible, possibly with some branching, but all structured in perhaps a menorah shape, or even around a central, just a central stem. But when you look at the hemp types, if you're going for fiber, you want incredibly high density planting. Again, as much photosynthetic efficiency as you can have on as few leaves as possible, because all of that energy will want to go into the stem or the seeds at the end of the day. So, and for fiber types, you want to have them be able to mature a little bit earlier so you can get high quality cellulose out of them, or you want them to mature to such a point that you can get high quality lignin, which can then go into a pipeline towards producing bio-based plastics. The seed types, of course, will be more focused around the flowers. And we want to get as much seed as possible, but probably in a much shorter plant than we would have for the fiber types, to make sure that the energy goes in that direction rather than into the stem.
Would you still need, you know, quite a lot of land use for that? You said before, compared to soya, it's probably less, I think I understood it right, it's less land use what you need. Can you also do it in vertical farming?
I wouldn't say less than soy right now, because the productivity per acre is about 60% in seed type cannabis compared to soy. But once we get that productivity up, mm-hmm. then the land use requirement comes down, of course. So that's one of the goals. In vertical farming, I think that there is potential, but more for the flower type for medicinal applications. I think that the great potential of hemp is that it can be highly adaptable to outdoor environments. But the advantage is that because we can breed it to grow anywhere in the world, we can shorten supply chains enormously, have production right next to processing, right next to manufacturing, all in the same geographical location, and cut out all of the transport that you would need for something like soy, which is all grown in Brazil and then transported out.
Okay, understand. Coming back to the different applications of cannabis, what we said, like it's fiber, it's the protein, the seeds, it's the CBD and the THC, or the medical usage of it as well, like one is recreation, one is medical, what I understood. What is the, like, say, revenue share or the right now, and what do you think it will be in 5 years, and what will change in that industry in the next 5 years?
Do you mean in terms of productivity compared to incumbent crops, or?
No, I mean for what are you making the most money with it right now? Is it because you're developing the whole technology stack, just to get a feeling for it? Is it mainly you are still developing THC, which is for the medical purpose, and you know the other part is right now the exploring fiber and so on, or is it already a significant part of your company, which will outgrow as well in future the other part, just to get a feeling where the market is going?
I mean, that's a great question. So what we are founded on is flower-type cannabis, and more specifically on CBD-type cannabis, because that's where our Pure group that has incubated Pure Gene for all these years have been focused on. But all of the learnings that we took from that breeding program and then our very early permits from the Swiss Federal Authority for Health to work with THC and import it and breed with it and develop outdoor varieties, which we're now supplying to various city trials around Switzerland to inform the legislators about recreational cannabis before the market opens up entirely. All of that research has really springboarded our understanding of the plant at this fundamental level. So that's still the core focus of our breeding programs. We want to create safe and stable and traceable varieties for the medicinal market. We also want to create very stable low THC varieties, which produce a lot of CBD and can be grown around the world. One of our projects is in Mexico that I'm very excited about. All of that information has allowed us to jump into the hemp space really effectively. And now we are beginning to deploy breeding programs in hemp around the world to be able to really develop these high-performance varieties that we need.
Interesting. So you're expecting that Switzerland is opening like California, I think it's as well Canada or some part of the US. You're thinking it will open totally Switzerland?
The guidance is very clear. In the next month, we'll get pharmaceutical cannabis. So this can be prescribed by a doctor and will be accessible to the broader public. And then following that, in the next 2 to 3 years, we expect the recreational markets to be open in Switzerland. And the phenomenal part of that is really how our company as a whole has been able to really work with the government authorities here in Switzerland, in particular Swissmedic and the Federal Office for Public Health. They've been incredibly supportive of our science-based approach, and we have had several projects together, which has provided them, I hope, with all of the information that they need to be able to create a safe safe legal market.
Okay, interesting. And do you think rest of Europe will follow?
It's a bit like reading tea leaves. In Germany, we expect the market to open up. I think the legislators on that side have been very clear that they want to open up the German market. However, Germany and all of us are facing current challenges in the world. And I think this may impact on the time that it takes the German market to open up, but I certainly think that it will. And we want to be ready to help them with whatever they need to.
Cool. So now we talked a lot about the company and how it's going to be developing and what you're focusing on. What kind of challenges you see in the next 5 years for you as a company, for you as in the market, besides yet the, like say, the THC or the more recreational market? What kind of challenges you see in the next 5 years which you need to address or needs to change in that area?
I think that cannabis as an industry, and it doesn't matter if it's flower type or hemp type, it's very much a new industry. And it's always in flux. So having spent many years in this industry now, I've learned that you have to be incredibly dynamic. You can't sit on a business model and project it out 2 years into the future and expect that you're going to follow it letter by letter at every step of the way into that future. So I think that the challenges from legislation, from public opinion, and how they develop over time is certainly something we need to keep an eye on and be dynamic too. But I do feel like the world has really woken up to the potential of this plant. I feel like there's strong public support to bring it out of the basement and into the field and really have it have a positive influence on society. I feel like people are ready. So we have to be mindful of it. We have to be adaptable. But I think we have a mostly open runway ahead of us.
So it's the perception as well still of the public, what cannabis is and can you actually use it for good things? Do you see, especially with from a policy or from, as you said before, regulations, if you want to use it for food, you know, as a protein base, is there anything to be cautious of that, let's say, the meager groups of this world thinking about, oof, do I really want to put that into my shelves, which is cannabis-based proteins? Is there, do you see there a challenge to actually overcome that hurdle?
I think that whenever you're bringing a new product to market, and it doesn't matter if it's a plant-based product or a new device or anything else, we should always proceed with the maximum amount of realistic caution that we can. But there is just phenomenal amounts of information on this, both in animal and human studies. Every indication is that this plant is safe. We've had an off-science study being conducted on smoking cannabis for not only generations, but millennia. And it seems that the negative effects are limited, if not present at all. So I would say that that we are in a good position to be able to take this plant into the food system with the right amount of caution, but I would not be worried.
Okay. I learned a lot, super interesting. Before, we're going to zoom out a little bit out of the cannabis focus. And what I really liked, I always send out for the listeners, I always send out before like a Google form and ask a few questions, as well a little bit more holistic questions. And what I really enjoyed were as well your quotes. So one was, the greatest glory in living lies not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall, Nelson Mandela. And the other one, which I found was as well very interesting, life finds a way, which is from Ian Malcolm, Jurassic Park. And you said one of your favorite books is actually Jurassic Park. So
that's right.
I would like to use that because I thought it was a brilliant and very surprising answer. Why is your most favorite book Jurassic Park and you actually quote from the movie?
I first read Jurassic Park when I was 10 years old. Many people don't even know it was a book before it was a movie, but of course it was. What struck me then as a 10-year-old was that there's this enormous power if you can get to grips with what the genomes can do and tell you. So there they were creating dinosaurs using their genome sequencers and supercomputers. And I just thought that if I could do that when I grew up, I would be just the happiest person alive. And I am, because now I walk into our labs and we have genome sequences and supercomputers and we're building great things with them. And I just love it. But the other thing about Jurassic Park is they really, it's a lesson in caution to make sure that you are applying science in the right way. Because with the power that is given to us through these technologies, we have the potential to do real good and also real harm. And it's that lesson that I keep with me and make sure that my work is contributing to good and not to harm.
So not your next company is going to try to revive the dinosaurs? Maybe. You know, who knows? Oh, very nice. And another fact which I really enjoyed is that obviously now knowing with Jurassic Park and you're very interested in a lot of animals, which are maybe a little bit before our time, but you actually grew up in a zoo. Can you please explain that as well?
It felt like it. My mother was also an entrepreneur, and she had several pet shops in the town I grew up in. And very often we'd have to clear out the shops and bring all the animals home. So we had 50 kittens and 20 dogs and parrots and monkeys and ducks and just about every animal you can imagine from the pet shop, all like either running around free in our house or in their separate cages. So it really was like growing up in a little mini zoo.
I like that a lot. To finalize, say it again, please.
No, I can tell you one thing from that experience is that you should, if you have a parrot, you should never give that parrot to anybody else to look after. They can be very revealing about what goes on behind closed doors.
That's true. If it starts swearing the whole time, you know, maybe something happens there. Oh my God, very funny. So Jurassic Park is one of your favorite books, but do you have any other book recommendation you would like to give to the audience?
I think that what I really like to do is I really like to understand my work really on the cutting edge, you know, get my literature from scientific papers. I think that would be my recommendation. I don't want that to sound like too ridiculous, but to synthesize your own knowledge is kind of where I like to fall on the spectrum, rather than kind of getting too fixed in other people's opinions. So I always find it very hard to recommend books.
to formulate it in my own words, you rather say, please read science book instead of business books.
and to be honest, with a startup and two small children, when I read, I normally read trashy science fiction.
Oh, very nice, very nice. Great. How can people contact you if they would like to hear more about what you guys are doing?
Absolutely through our webpage, puregene.com. I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter occasionally, but webpage is definitely the best way to go. And come and find out more about what we're doing, see some pretty pictures. And we're a very open company. When people want to come and see what we're doing in the fields, we really love to host them. So that's the best for us.
Fantastic. I will definitely follow that invitation and have a look. And thank you so much for joining my podcast today. I really enjoyed the conversation and I'm really excited to see what you guys are up to in the future.
Thanks very much. It was great to be here.
Thank you for joining today's episode. You can find the show notes, background materials, and contact details of our guests on our website, sustainnow.ch. Follow and share our podcast on any platform available. Do you have a comment or interesting solution to take a deep dive? Please don't hesitate to go to our website, sustainnow.ch, and write us an email.